Chapter 16. Robin helped prepare the ship, keeping a sharp eye out for Vartzi or his men. He hated leaving Petra alone when she was so distressed, but he couldn't rely on the sailors as lookout. In any case, the less they were alone together, the better. Tension, danger, and action seemed to create strange impulses and wreck self-control. The sun was almost down, and the sea was rising. Passengers were moving steadily onto the packet ship, but boxes, chests, and other luggage were still being loaded into the hold. Closer by, people were boarding smaller, privately hired vessels. He saw one that already held a coach, and another that was being loaded with casks, under a man's careful supervision. Burgundy? Port? Cognac?
"You're escaping villains, monsieur?"
Robin looked to see a fresh-faced lad looking up at him. The long face and nose said he was the captain's son.
"Of a sort," he said. "Are you free to help me keep watch?"
"Yes, monsieur."
"Then climb higher and watch for anyone who's behaving strangely. Not going aboard a ship, for example."
"Yes, monsieur," the boy said, and climbed nimbly up the sheets, clearly enjoying the mission.
A lad after Robin's heart. But this wasn't a game, alas. Nor were his feelings for Petra de Vario. They could shape, perhaps destroy, his life.
He leaned against a rope, enjoying a fresh breeze and golden evening light, watching the quay settle. But he was thinking about family, duty, and his mother, still grieving for her husband, and expecting Robin to be his image as Earl of Huntersdown. His parents had been warm and attentive, but much of their attention had focused on training him for his future. All his attendants and tutors had been carefully selected, and his progress closely observed. He'd been trained as intensely in elegance, wit, and charm as in Greek, Latin, and the sciences. He knew music and all the arts, and had been encouraged from youth to be a patron according to his tastes. He had no particular talent for any such thing, but no one could be perfect. His parents had been held up as role models, and he'd seen them that way, people of intelligence, grace, and civility. Nothing was less elegant and civil than excess emotions, especially those connected with romantic love. And romantic love had no place in the business of marriage, especially for a future earl. There one chose a person of congenial nature, correct behaviour, suitable family, and handsome property. Robin's parents had expected to select an ideal bride for him, and Robin had not objected, knowing they would choose wisely. He'd asked only to wait until he was 30. As he had two younger brothers, they'd agreed, but only upon his promise not to marry without their approval. He supposed that promise still held, and his mother would never approve of Petra de Vario. He shook himself. He didn't even know why he was thinking such things. He'd known her only days, and what he knew wasn't promising. She was a penniless bastard, perhaps of an English lord, who would probably deny her when confronted. And perhaps not even that. He didn't think Petra was lying, but her mother might not have been entirely truthful. If she'd had an affair with an actor, mercenary, or even a nobleman's footman, might she not have preferred to say it was the nobleman himself? Would she then send her daughter in search of him? Alas, it was possible for lies to turn into truth in some people's minds, especially over 20 difficult years. Petra would make a perfect mistress, of course, perhaps even for life. But she was fleeing across Europe at great risk to avoid exactly that. So he would let her go. He would see her safe somewhere, give her money if she'd take it, but then walk away and forget about her. He realized his hand was tight on a rough rope and relaxed it. Petra de Vario was nothing but trouble,
and it would be a good day when she left his life forever.
Petra sat on a bench listening to the bustle of the wharf and watching the light change as the sun set. The ship began to bob a little more, which she assumed meant the tide was rising. She'd never been on the sea before, unless one counted the canals and lagoon of Venice. Surely after all this, God would spare her seasickness. Then she heard a screeching voice. Lady Sodworth. She turned and knelt to peer out. Yes, there she was, late, apparently, harrying her children toward a nearby ship. Georgie broke free to run, too close to the wharf edge. Petra started as if to capture him, but a sailor grabbed him, tucked him, screaming under his arm, and carried him on board. Perhaps that was the sort of nursemaid the children needed. She remembered caution and slipped back quickly out of sight, but she smiled ruefully at what might have been. If Ludo had been the slightest bit sensible, he would have washed his hands of her. She would have endured the journey in Lady Sodworth's party and would arrive in Dover tomorrow with only simple cares. She would never have encountered Robin Bonchurch, never have suffered this tormenting conflict of the heart. Tomorrow she would have gone with Lady Sodworth to London and somehow managed from there. At worst, she could have sought refuge with Teresa Eamer. Surely she wouldn't turn away her patroness's daughter. Petra straightened, thinking. If Teresa was now so famous a hostess, wouldn't she know her father? When she escaped Robin, perhaps she should go to her address in Soho Square. Unwise to trust such a woman with a secret, but surely she could steer gossip. After all, her mother's beautiful, gentle young lover, the one of the dark, somehow smiling eye, was now a great man, but a dangerous one. He was sometimes referred to as the Dark Marquis, or even the Eminence Noire, the dark power behind the throne. They'd heard other things as well, that he was a duelist of great skill who'd killed a man who insulted his sister, that his mother had gone mad and that her blood had tainted him. Petra's mother had dismissed that possibility, but Petra had promised her mother that she would go directly to her father, but she couldn't put herself into the power of the formidable Marquis of Hrothgar until she was sure, at the very least, of safety. Robin saw Poeck and Fontaine go aboard the packet ship, along with a cloaked man and woman. He watched for Vartzi, but didn't see him. Merian began to call orders, and his crew sprang into action. The same thing was happening on other ships. The tide was right, and the journey had begun. Had Vartzi decided not to continue his hunt into England? Robin turned to go into the cabin, but the lad called to him. Robin turned and saw a man running down the quay, shouting up to the readying ships. Vartzi's swordsman. Damnation. Robin ducked into the cabin to lie on the empty bench, saying, "Stay down," to Petra. Coquette, damn her, leapt onto him with a yip of greeting. He said, "Hush," covering her muzzle with his hand, and she obeyed. The running man was shouting a question to each ship. Booted footsteps clattered to a stop at the Corlie. "Captain," an Italian accent. "I've mislaid my party. A young couple. He with golden brown hair, she with dark, very short. They have a small white dog." Petra gasped, and Robin shook his head at her. "Not here, monsieur," Merian called back. "Got two finicky older gentlemen and their servants threatening to be sick before we even cast off." Footsteps ran on. "Vartzi knows," she gasped. Robin rolled onto his side and tried a calming smile. "I did hope to keep them fooled a little longer, but no matter. There, we're off and free of them. No, no looking yet,
tempting though it is.
She settled back, staring upward, and he saw the rosary move through her fingers.
None.
Now she was out of her habit, he kept forgetting that detail. His mother was Catholic. Did that make it more or less likely that she'd approve of a nun? As a bride?
Don't be an idiot.
Vartzi won't stop, she whispered.
Don't worry. In England, he'll be on my territory.
She rolled her back to look at him. King George in disguise, are you? He sat up, feeling the welcome roll of the coulée catching the wind. He pulled out a coin and gave it to her. No resemblance at all. She studied the profile in the fading light.
I grant you that. So why think yourself immune to Vartzi there?
Trust me. If he takes one step outside of the law in England, I can crush him. She sighed, and he knew he'd exasperated her again. Perhaps he should tell her his rank, but with all these shady goings-on, he might prefer to keep his identity a secret. He could settle her somewhere, and Robin Bonchurch could disappear.
Robin, she said patiently, Vartzi will follow your men to London. When he doesn't find me, he will capture them and torture them.
Her certainty chilled him, but he said, No, he won't. They'll travel on the public coach, then go to my house. Then they'll alert a friend of mine, a major in the Horse Guards, who'll make sure no one can touch them. As for us, we go from Folkestone to a friend nearby where we'll be equally safe.
And that's going to explode any secrets, Robin thought, unless I can forewarn Thorn.
Why did this all have to be so complicated?
Or where we'll put your friend in danger? She protested. Why will you not understand?
He put Coquette aside and slid to sit cross-legged on the floor by her. He turned Petra's face to him and saw evidence of recent tears.
Why can you not trust me? I will keep you safe.
I know you'll try. I'm getting better at it. He teased. This rescuing of damsels business is new to me, you know.
Please stop joking.
She rolled sharply onto her side to face him.
Don't you understand Vartzi yet? His diabolical way of knowing everything, his ruthlessness?
Don't you understand me? He retorted. 'Tis my nature to joke, Petra, but I can act seriously in season. Yes, I misjudged the situation at the Renard. But I know better now. Are we not here? Have we not escaped?
I want to believe that.
Believe. She rested her face on his hand for a blessed moment, but then pulled back.
But if he asks about alternative ports, won't someone tell him about Folkestone?
Do all Italians think in knots?
Yes, he conceded, but there are other harbours, Hythe, Deal, even Ramsgate or Hastings. He'll have to follow my men and we'll be safe, though
he didn't want to confess another mistake. I don't suppose you have any money, do you?
You don't, she asked, eyes widening.
A slight lapse in planning, I confess. When travelling, I split the ready money between the three of us. There's more concealed in various places, but all the luggage is on the packet. No ducats sewn into your clothing, my sweet.
As every stitch I have on is new.
True enough.
Ah, well, I have enough to pay Captain Merrion and the smugglers.
Smugglers? He explained the necessities of landing in Folkestone. She rolled onto her back.
When supposedly ordinary farm women turn out to be murderers and villains stalk us, you will entrust us to known criminals? He took her hand and found it chilled, so he held it for warmth. Most smugglers are ordinary fishermen and farmers, just earning a little extra by night. Perhaps you really did live a life of virtue and propriety until recently.
On the contrary, I was a wild and willful girl.
Ah, yes, with lousy Ludovico. She turned her head to frown at him.
He didn't have lice.
Your translations again. It also means disgusting.
He's not even that. Remember, I would have married him.
The spear that went through Robin was undoubtedly jealousy, the most forbidden of forbidden emotions. He rose to his feet. I'm going out again.
Don't.
It was almost a whisper, but stopped him dead.
Did that disgust you?
She asked, looking upward.
I'm only trying to be truthful. How can you imagine that I wanted to marry a disgusting man?
She looked at him again.
Please. I'm so afraid.
The dim light caught tears on her dark lashes and the quiver of her lips. Robin hesitated, then lay down beside her, taking her into his arms. She stiffened and pushed him away, but he said, "Merely an anodyne for fear. Don't we all need comfort in the dark?"
"It's not quite dark," she said,
but she relaxed against him. The bench was narrow, so he readjusted their positions, so she lay half on top of him, her head in the hollow of his shoulder. She sighed and settled there, her arm across his chest, one leg over his thighs. Dangerous, but he'd been trained in self-control. He'd also been trained to offer protection and comfort to those in need, and that he could do. He didn't attempt conversation. It would strain his truthfulness to tell her more about himself, and therefore didn't seem right to pry more information from her. They rolled on the sea as flaming sunset settled into moonlit night. And he too relaxed, sure of his purpose and his ability to achieve it. He would keep Petra safe. Petra absorbed his warmth and inhaled his smell, varied now by sea air and a touch of tar. She knew she shouldn't indulge in this intimacy, but there was no easy way to reject it, and it might be her last chance to lie so close to Robin. Only his open-neck shirt covered his chest, and the rolled-up sleeves exposed his forearms. Only his breeches covered his lower body, and she regretted her skirt and petticoat that added to layers there. It could be just this once, because she was going to have to flee him soon. It was partly to keep her secrets, but also in the hope that Varzi would ignore him and his men once they were apart. There was a selfish part, however. Varzi knew she was with Robin, so leaving him would make her safer. It would be hard, though, perhaps the hardest thing she'd ever done. She'd never imagined that a heart could be snared almost instantly, that a stranger could become precious overnight. Her mother's attempts to explain her liaison had made no sense, but now Petra could begin to understand. If it had been like this, even now, simply lying here, danger stirred. He was stroking her back, doubtless in the same meaningless way that he stroked Coquette. But heat began to flicker along her skin and below, where her thighs were open against his leg. She pulsed with the same kind of hunger an empty stomach might feel, and perhaps had done so since Montreuil. Her body remembered and ached to complete what had been interrupted. No, no, no! What a disaster that would have been! But she couldn't make herself tear away from him, couldn't ask him to stop his gentle, tormenting stroking of her shoulder. A sudden sharp toss made him tighten his arm and pushed her harder against his thigh. "We're well underway," he said. Too far, too fast. "How long?" she asked. We could arrive by 2 in the morning.
Arrive where?
Petra tried to be practical.
We can travel on to your friend's house at that time.
There's always a way, and there's a moon.
Who is this friend?
She asked, unable to resist moving her hand to cover his naked arm, to feel his firm muscles there and fine springy hair.
Captain Rose of the Black Swan, a smuggler of sorts.
She stirred to look at him in the increasingly dim light.
Now we have the truth. You too are a smuggler. Your wealth comes from brandy and lace.
He grinned. Not me. I'm a respectable fellow. She made a disbelieving noise, and he looked hurt.
I just hope Captain Rose is at his place in Stoating.
And if not?
I have free run of his house. We're by way of being related.
He pulled her close.
Once there, we'll be safe.
I hope so.
It will be so. Forget vile Vartzi.
Had he moved his hand lower, or had she only just become aware of its heat in the small of her back?
Mind you, he said, breath warm in her hair. I'm wondering if I should introduce you to Rose. He seems to appeal to the women, even though he's a dark-visaged fellow.
Is he rich? She asked, realizing she was stroking him. She stopped.
Are you mercenary?
A penniless lady has to think of these things, she murmured into his chest, slipping helplessly into flirtation that had once been so natural to her, and so very dangerous.
He's rich, he said. All that smuggling, you know.
Richer than you?
Alas, yes.
Then perhaps I will woo him and win him.
Then perhaps I shall be jealous, he murmured with a bit of a growl in it, playing the game.
Not you, she teased. He raised her head, so she had to meet his eyes.
Why not me?
Because you have more hens than you know what to do with, Cock Robin.
Cock.
His eyes lit with laughter. Do you resemble your mother?
Why?
She asked, startled. Because if you do, I understand Riddlesome entirely. His lips met hers, but only in a teasing brush. She should leave it like that, but her tongue flickered out to play. The tingle in her skin ran hot now, and her breasts felt tight. She was moist and hungry between her thighs, but she couldn't go as far as that. They played. A joust of tongues and hot breath, then came together for the unavoidable kiss. Petra sank into it with despairing relief, like a starving woman grabbing poisoned bread, not caring for anything as long as she ate. The boat rocked and tossed, adding tumult to a tumultuous blending of mouths and more than mouths. Men talked on the deck. They might hear. Perhaps that's why she and Robin were being so very, very quiet. That taut control drove Petra wildly beyond hope of resistance. She tugged his loose shirt completely free, so she could explore his body so lean, so strong, so perfectly vibrant. She stretched her leg around his, wanting, needing. He gripped her stocking-covered calf, then her uncovered thigh, widening her still more as he slid fingers to the inner side and up. No, she gasped.
He went still, rigid. She heard the silent plea and surrendered.
Not no, she whispered in helpless, trembling surrender. Yes, yes, please, yes.
He slid a finger deeper, catching her gasp in a kiss, shifting them both again and exploring more deeply. She should fight. She should. But all willpower, all thought incinerated in the flaming desire roaring through her, arching her.
Cool air brushed her naked thighs. He'd pulled her skirts up high.
"Open your bodice for me,"
he whispered, as his clever fingers stroked in gentle torment. Fighting to suppress gasps, her hips moving against his hand, Petra fumbled with the hooks, cursing the way they resisted. But then the gown fell open, so she was covered only by her shift above, her bunched-up petticoat below. She fumbled with the tie that gathered the neck of her shift, but her fingers wouldn't work. He nuzzled his way to her linen-covered breasts. They were already aching, and when he found a nipple with his teeth, she let out a soft cry.
"Hush,"
he said, as he had to the dog, but with bright laughter in his voice. Petra turned her head into his shoulder to smother other noises as he started to stroke again, faster now, driving and demanding her, as Ludo...
"Don't think about Ludo."
But oh, how she'd missed this soaring, tightening, tormenting surrender to a man's hot, hard body, his spicy man-scent drowning all. And this man was tormenting her, playing with her with hand and mouth. She wanted to demand, to scream, but instead sank her teeth and felt him jerk. He gave up his games, and she exploded again and again, her mind going blind white with pleasure. He captured her lips, and she poured desire back into him, still wanting, still needing, deep in her throbbing, cavernous core. She pushed her hand down between them, tugging at the buttons of his flap.
"No,"
he said, struggling to control her. But she had his hot, hard length now. He wanted her as much as she wanted him. She wriggled under him.
"Please, please."
And he broke. He moved between her wide, hungry thighs and plunged deep. It had been so long it shocked her. And he was big, almost too big. But then he slid on thick moisture and was perfect, filling her perfectly, joining to the hard-hitting hilt again and again, so it seemed almost too much, but never too much, as their sweat ran together and her heart raced, fit for bursting. He stopped, still deeply seated, breathing in deep gasps. He couldn't stop now, could he? Just in case, she wrapped legs and arms around him, pushed her hips against him, and he pumped into her again, pounded against her. And the sailors were probably hearing everything, but she didn't care, as she exploded again more blindingly than before, and again moments later when he went rigid with the same burning, arching ecstasy. Lax on her back, sucking in air, Petra finally felt astonishingly, perfectly complete.
"Hell,"
he said, and moved out of and off her.